Before we get started on the x-rays, I got to cover a little ground splinting stuff, okay? We talked about this with everybody at probably multiple points about splints being properly applied, about splints leaving the ER without being evaluated, okay? And like the last 2 weeks alone, okay, and these aren't, I'm not bringing you MedExpress cases because I know you're not there, okay? We had a OCL splint with absolutely no extra padding whatsoever, with fiberglass up against the skin. We've had a patient who had a subtalar dislocation, which was incompletely reduced, and the splint was put on with posterior OCL 90 degrees. And someone ingeniously decided to, in order to keep the foot held up, wrap something around the metatarsal heads and then up the calf in a figure of eight to keep the foot held up. Now, that's clever and cool, but it was put on while the OCL was drying, and it was pulled very tight such that it made two deep ridges in the OCL right at the MTP heads, and when it was removed so that the rest of the reduction could be done, there was deep bruising on the patient's foot in both spots. Okay, we had Dr. Duncan in the last couple weeks has had two people with upper extremity, one was a supracondylar humerus, one was a forearm, both of them were splinted in full extension. Okay, and little kids, which certainly, particularly with supracondylar humerus fractures, you can be a lot of swelling, and we tell you not to splint them all the way up like this or splint them up at 90 because you can get a neurovascular compromise and et cetera, et cetera. But if you splint them in full extension, it becomes very difficult to keep the thing elevated. They're running into stuff, and it's almost an unmanageable situation with the patient. I'm seeing, like, on a regular, like, almost every day I'm in the office basis, splints on the wrist and hand that come all the way to the fingertips with them crumpled up like this, okay? Not to the distal palmar flexion crease like we talked about, but all the way to the tip, okay? Minimal padding, stuff too long on the popliteus and the fossa. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on. And I'm starting to get a little bit pissed about it because people are looking at me going, don't you go through this with these guys? Don't you cover this ground? You do the splinting thing, right, Menopace? I'm like, apparently not. What I don't want to have to resort to and tell my colleagues to resort to is take the name, take the ER encounter form, and we're going to start writing down who's not checking these things. As one of my partners puts it, you got one of the most important parts of the orthopedic care apparently being done by the least qualified people in the ER. So if you're not going to check it, and you're going to trust it to faith, we're going to continue to have this kind of stuff happen. So, and... Okay. Okay. Cool. So what do we got, Chief? What is this?
This is a case from Dr. Nofsinger, an ankle injury from March.
Tell me about the patient, Dr. Nofsinger.
She was a 50-year-old woman that didn't believe the barricades on Northbound 675. Drove through. She ran to something which stopped her van from going over the breakdown. Just apparently about teetering on the edge. Trapped in the van overnight for about 4 hours before sunrise came and people saw the van in the wrong spot. She came in just complaining of everything, had both bilateral swollen ankles, and so we did these x-rays and found out why she wasn't able to get up and walk.
Gotcha. Okay.
Tenderness both sides.
All right. So on this, you got kind of a pseudo AP, or an attempt at an AP of an ankle. This is actually not too bad. Do you see anything on that view? Anybody? Yeah, show me another one. I'm not hearing too much so far. Okay. So this is a mortise view, and this is a very good mortise view. Do you see anything on this view? The mortise looks what? Intact, did you say? I would agree. Yeah. So in a general sense, this doesn't look like it's lined up with the rest of this, right? I mean, that's fair. But the mortise, I would agree, it looks intact. The malleoli look okay. There might be a lateral malleolus fracture here that I'm not seeing very well, but I'm good with that. Next. This is an open or closed injury, Adam?
Closed.
Skin at risk?
No, it's not at risk. She had plenty of skin.
Okay. Was there enough over the area of interest? All right. That's good. It's kind of an oblique view. I think you can see there's starting to be something going on there. Let's give us the home run shot here, Chief. That's the right side. Anyone want to go? Okay. So what's broken? On the right, you're correct that it's a Taylor neck fracture. Okay. It's a comminuted Taylor neck fracture. And what else did you say? That what about the calcaneus?
Well, it looks like the scalus is 100% displaced and the calcaneus is pulled up to the position of the talus.
If the rest of the talus is where it's supposed to be, how would the calcaneus get to a different position? Correct. It's a subtalar dislocation, okay? So, actually, leave these. Okay, because you can compare them.
No,
can you please leave them?
I can absolutely.
Okay. All right. I thought I didn't say please. I was very polite.
Absolutely not.
But if you look at the left, and we won't get into the left just yet. But if you look at the left, you can see pretty much what looks like a normal subtalar joint here, calcaneus underneath the talus, talar neck intact, talus underneath the tibia. If you come over here, talus half of it's underneath the tibia. But the subtalar joint's disrupted because the calcaneus is probably out the lateral side and the talar neck is gone with it. Okay? So, closed injury, fracture dislocation of the talus, subtalar dislocation, horrible injury, horrible prognosis, got upwards of about a 90% chance of avascular necrosis of the entire talus, even if it's reduced perfectly and fixed perfectly. So, very bad injury. What do we do with it, Dr. Nelson?
She went to the OR.
Pull it up.
How do you fix that?
I would have probably tried to get a CAT scan on it once the subtalar joint was reduced. But it depends on how bad it is. If the comminution is minimal and it's mostly two big pieces, you usually put a couple screws across it. And if it's highly comminuted, I had one that was an open subtalar fracture dislocation at St. Mary's that I took to the OR, reduced, washed out, closed the wound, but the comminution was so horrible and it was such a bad injury in a young patient. I sent him to Grand Rapids. I sent it to Dr. Goulet down at the University of Michigan. They had to put medial and lateral plates and an external fixator on the foot to even get it looking like normal, which is something out of my skill level. You probably can reduce that in the ER. That's okay. That's all right. If you got to pull up the next one, that's okay. Basically, it's you got to have good muscle relaxation, but you basically got to pull the foot back underneath the tibia, and it's grabbing the foot. And oftentimes, you have to put your thumb on the talus that's left in order to keep it. Yeah. So. Yeah. Okay. Good. Good.
This is a pelvic injury by Dr. Charlton.
So this is a 19-year-old female that I talked to you over the phone with.
Okay.
On exam, she had decreased one sound, was complaining of pain basically everywhere. Then this was her third motor vehicle collision in 3 weeks, I believe.
But she already busted the neck.
Yeah. So.
Just bad luck, I'm sure. Okay. I'm gonna ask you the same question I asked you over the phone, which was, what do you mean by a stable pelvis, and how do you determine a stable pelvis? Didn't reproduce any pain. Okay. But then this lady was with it?
She was with it. Gotten some pain medicine, but was not doped up.
Okay. So, stable from the mechanical sense,
correct.
Not stable from a hemodynamic sense.
Correct.
Okay.
She was
hypotensive. Okay. Okay. All right. This is something, this is not a question, this is not a, I'm not pimping anybody with this. There is a trend in, I'm seeing more and more and more of, we don't get an AP pelvis anymore. We just send them to the CAT scanner, okay? Why is that? Is there a change? And I realize I'm getting old now and things are beyond me, but is there some... Okay. Well, no, CT is great. Okay, CT is great, but there's a lot of information that you can get. I mean, and I trained at Hurley. They roll in the bay, the x-ray unit's right above their head, bam, chest, pelvis, lateral C-spine, done. I mean, in a matter of seconds. And you've got a crap load of information before they even hardly have a chance to get an IV in anybody, okay? And I tell you that, I mean, you see it just like I do. How many of our patients that come in would have an easily examinable pelvis to determine stability? I don't know that I can with any degree of certainty on an awake, alert patient who's been in an accident with multiple injuries determine whether or not they have a mechanically stable pelvis with an exam. You know? I mean, how many people can you really grab their ASIS and move them? I don't know. I've gotten weak over the years too, so maybe it's just me. But I just don't. I don't know if that's a reliable exam in my hands either. But okay, so anyways, so that's not standard anymore. Okay.
What's your stance on rocking the pelvis, anyways? There's some of that talk too about, you know, checking for stability.
I mean, I think it's an okay thing to do, but I don't know that I don't know that I ever in my ortho training called one of my attendings and said, yeah, on exam their pelvis is stable. I don't know, when it comes to pelvic fractures and pelvic injuries, I get films, I assess this, and I can say this is an unstable pelvis because, okay, not because of my exam was so, you know, excellent. But I look at this x-ray right here, okay, and obviously you see the rami fractures, okay. She a restrained driver?
Unrestrained,
she was a driver, she was struck on the driver's side. Okay? So, you look at this, you look at this, there's some subtle things here. Okay? First of all, when you're evaluating an actual pelvis film, when you get them now, okay? And you have to do this with CT scan too, because if people are a little askew on the scanner, when you're looking through the cuts on a CT scan, you have to bear that in mind, because things will look different right to left on a CT scan if people aren't perfectly positioned. Same thing with an AP pelvis. The first thing, question you want to ask yourself, okay, is this a good AP? If it's rotated, if the patient's rocked, if they're bumped up, things are going to look different side to side. This is a pretty good AP of a pelvis, okay? A look at the obturator foramen. Body looks just about normal. And maybe she's tipped a little bit to the right, but I would have concerns with this broken. You see more of the ilium on the right than you do on the left. Is this tipped open? The SI joints don't look quite the same, but I got concerned about this right here. Okay? There is, when you look at the iliopectineal line coming up around here, the SI joint looks reduced here, but there's something going on here with the sacrum. Okay? And so you're here, you have at least a vertical shear, maybe, if not a lateral compression type of injury to the pelvis. So the CT scan showed
a left hemisacral fracture.
Okay. Okay. So now you've got an unstable, mechanically unstable pelvis. Okay. But you will, and we do too, because it's subtle, all right? But you have to know, at least know to look for it. And the first part of looking for it is really being able to look at this film and say, okay, do I have a good film? Okay, if it's a pretty good film, what do I need to look at? You know, the iliopectineal line coming around to the symphysis should be a nice smooth oval without breaks in it. When you start to see disruption in here, you got to be suspicious. Okay, if you were looking for if you had an otherwise hemodynamically stable patient, but you were worried about their pelvis and you suspected a sacral fracture, what films would you order? Inland outlet views, very good. Okay, very good. If you had a hemodynamically stable patient and you suspected an acetabular fracture and the AP pelvis looked okay, what films would you order? Frog leg for the proximal femur in the hip, okay? But you order the obliques in the opposite direction. They're called Judet views, G-U-D-E-T, okay? But, it's covered. Can I write on here?
Yeah.
Okay. J-U-D-E-T. Some French guy that they named it after. Okay, but basically what they are, they're 45 degree tilts in this direction and in that direction. Okay, because the inlet and outlet is the opposite. Okay, so they're 90 degrees from the inlet and outlet views, basically. But if you want a better appreciation for the acetabulum, okay, those are the films that you order. Now the techs are probably not like they're going to go what, But they're 45-degree obliques of the pelvis, and then you have to tell them right to left, because you tell them 45-degree obliques and you'll get inland outlets. Sorry, this is the OR. Okay, what else about this lady? Yeah, is there any, what else do you want, what other kind of ground do you want to cover here? Okay. I wish it was quick for us to pull up the CT scan, because what you'll see in the CT scan is not only is there a sacral fracture, the SI joint is somewhat wide as well, and there's significant injury. So, no. Yep. It's helpful for me to have a plain film right now, okay? Because, you know, I see that plain film in the trauma bay, and you know you've got a hypotensive patient, okay? And there's all those things that you're worried about, liver, spleen, everything else. But right then and there, in 30 seconds, before they're even going to the CT scanner, I can tell you, you better worry about that pelvis, okay? You know, you better keep an eye on that. You better, you know, think about having a binder available. You better, you know what I mean? So. I mean, in 1 second, before I forget. Other, also, too, in that pelvis, you better worry about the bladder. You better worry about, I mean, that information you got right now. Okay, what other things on my list do I now have to worry about? Okay, go ahead, Adam. The CT is helpful after it's reduced. Before it's reduced, it's just jumbled up stuff, and it would be a waste of time. The CT is helpful in terms of planning how you're going to fix it, if you're going to fix it, is it fixable? But only after the talus is back, you know, in line, the subtalar joint's back. Because otherwise, the CT scan, you're just like, no, this looks, what is this? You know, so.
If you have a hypotensive patient with a pelvic issue, IR said that if you do the cystourethrogram, you might cloud their field with dye and make embolization kind of impossible.
Okay.
Has that ever been your experience, or is that a theoretical thing? Like, do you go for it and then deal with IR's wrath? Or
I don't know that I'm the guy to answer that question. But have I had that fight before? I have in my residency before. But things are changing, which is clear, and so I don't know that I can intelligently answer that one.
This is an ankle injury practice by Sammy here.
Okay.
Yeah, she's a 46-year-old female, stethoscope. Closed ankle fracture.
Okay.
Blistered skin.
Blistered skin.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. But not open.
Not open.
Okay.
I saw her actually in the OR trying to reduce the fracture.
Oh, good for you.
So she was sedated. That's
okay. So what do you think she has? Well, how would you call this? Or you know the answer to this, right?
I know that's it.
Somebody else try. These are good films. It's all right there. Anyone?
So she's got a fracture dislocation, fractures involving the distal malleolus of the tibia.
Okay.
Which is displaced lateral person.
Okay. Any other fractures? Okay, that's pretty good. Which direction did this dislocation go? Somebody said it. Somebody said it again. posterior lateral, okay? Posterior lateral dislocation, okay? The dislocation of the joint is the distal segment relative to the proximal one. So, the talus and the rest of the foot went laterally and posteriorly. So it's posterior lateral fracture dislocation, okay? What type of a fracture is this? Generally, how would you call this? What would you say this is? It's probably a trimal. Can you see the third fracture for sure? Kathy Menapace. It's an 8:30 start. I'm giving a lecture over at Synergy. So I'll be over there within the next 15 minutes probably. Okay. Thanks. Bye. Okay. So good job with this. Medial malleolus is fractured here. Lateral malleolus is fractured here. Okay. The syndesmosis is probably still intact. Okay. The syndesmotic ligaments are probably okay because the fibula is still tight up against the tibia right there. So syndesmosis is probably okay. Mortis obviously disrupted. It's a dislocation. Okay. So we have a reduced film. Dr. Shijini, was this reduced when you got it in the OR? Okay, so when this patient came to the OR, it still looked like those x-rays? So there was no attempt. Did it come to the OR in a splint?
Yeah, with the splint. This is, I think, with the splint.
So this is the way it was in the OR?
In the OR, yeah.
Okay, that's... Okay. Okay, thank you. Okay. That's perfect. That's great. But we're giving them more responsibility now. So, okay. So, so very important things. Okay. That medial skin is at risk because everything else went laterally, okay? And that's where the blisters are. That's where the wound will be, and it's usually a transverse wound when it's an open fracture like that because the end of the tibia just cuts through the skin and you get this transverse laceration, okay? And that has to be reduced with or without sedation in the ER as soon as you see it, okay? Because if it's not open, what you'll see is the skin will be, it may be bruised, but it also can start to get red and then white, okay, as the bones pushing up against the skin and the blood starts to go away, and that's just an impending necrosis. So, okay, so this is reduced. You get this to the OR, and yeah, there's a posterior malleolar fragment right there. Okay, so it's a trimal fracture dislocation. But I would maintain that I think that the syndesmosis is still okay. All right. So, and then you guys fix it right away, huh? Okay. No, I think we're probably all right. I'm sure it's two screws and a plate. Go to the fluoro. I know why, and you can scroll these fluoros, because I agree with this treatment, and I know why it was treated like this. Excellent. Okay. I was worried that this got fixed right away, and it didn't get fixed right away, and I agree with that because these people swell too much, their skin is at risk, and if you go making incisions on these people right away, you can end up staring at your hardware and having horrible infections. I never fix these people right away. I will let them leave the ER if they're concentrically reduced. Okay. That patient was still subluxed laterally, and that's why Dr. Woolahan took this to the OR. Did he explain that to you? Okay. He took it to the OR because it wasn't completely reduced. Okay. The talus was still sliding out laterally, and he was still going to have skin issues, and he didn't want that sitting around at home incompletely reduced for a week. So he took it to the OR, he manipulated it, he got it as anatomically reduced as you're going to get. The talus is underneath the tibia now like it's supposed to be. And now that patient can sit home, put their leg up, let the swelling come down, and you can fix it safely in 1 to 2 weeks.
So do that, you splint it like we do, or do you actually cast it?
We do not cast it.
So you splint like we
did. I don't cast it. Did he cast it? You don't... Okay. Did he split the cast? But he split the cast.
No. He removed the splint and he cast it.
A circular cast.
Did he bivalve it?
Yeah. Did he cut it? Did he cut the cast? Split it?
No.
Okay. All right. I would have at least split the cast. It's just differences in people. But I would have... Yeah. But I used plaster. You guys know that. But I would have put this in posterior and medial lateral plaster splints with a mold under the C-arm to hold it reduced. Okay? Yep, exactly. That's dealer's choice. But he might not have taken it to the OR if it was anatomically reduced. Dr. McLean just reduced one for me the other night, anatomic, saw the guy in the office, talked to him. He's scheduled for surgery in a week to 10 days. Okay? So.
And lots of padding.
Well, the padding's everywhere, but particularly the heel, because probably that person's at home with pressure on their heel. Okay, which is normal. Okay, you gotta pad the malleoli, and proximally you can't be too long such that you're worried about the neck of the fibula and the perineal nerve. Where I would add padding?
Where you would end the splint.
Okay.
Up high towards the knee.
I would end my splint here.
So below okay. The distal end, the proximal end of the fibula.
Absolutely. Yeah, but I'd splint it below the tibial tubercle. So I'd have extra padding here, a couple extra turns of padding at the top near the neck of the fibula, extra padding at the heel and the malleoli. So. Uh-huh. Yes. Superficial abrasions are still a closed injury. It hasn't violated the dermis. Then it's still a closed injury as far as I'm concerned. And it's also more reason to wait to fix it surgically, as opposed to making incisions through abrasions. The other thing you don't like to make incisions through are hemorrhagic fracture blisters. I don't know if you guys have seen those yet. But serous fracture blisters you can work with surgically. Hemorrhagic fracture blisters you should try to avoid. They have a higher risk of infection. Can I show a pediatric one? Or do we all have to go? I want to... Okay, I'm here next month. I'll save my kid fracture then. And we'll do his femur so he doesn't forget.
It's 7-9-2-8-90. At what point do you add adjunct for an open fracture? Most people say
adjunct,
but others say adjunct. It's a real bad
The badness for adding gent is contamination. Soil, or not necessarily the dirt, that's more of an anaerobe, but if I have a contaminated environment at all, there's stuff in the wound, I'll add gent.
Yep. So this is a 14-year-old.
Oh, yeah. I know that's one.
A 14-year-old that was riding his dirt bike out back.
Yeah.
On his own personal dirt bike track.
Uh-huh.
Dad said he didn't need his helmet because it was wet out and the ground was soft.
Sure. I don't understand why this broke with the soft ground. It shouldn't have broke. Dr. Duncan told me about that.
The first thing that myself, my attending, and the trauma resident all thought was,
shit,
we might need to intubate this kid for pain management. So we ended up having to give him 10 of accommodating to a burst set simply to get him off the backboard. And while he was under, we put him in a stager's form.
Okay. There's a lot of good learning things actually from a case like that, and I think you bring up a good point. You know, obviously the kid's a wimp. It's soft ground. I mean, come on, he must have weak bone. It's a simple fracture pattern. But I think the thing to not be fooled about this is that you have to consider it a high energy injury. Okay, it's motocross, motorcycle. It's a high energy injury. So the other thing, because of where his leg is, you have to think about what the end of that jagged femur has done to the soft tissues. Okay, and there's a lot of torn up muscle. Okay, we know femur fractures can bleed. You know how much, you know all those questions about the blood loss that you can have from a femur fracture. But when it's legs up by his ear, and it's been a high energy mechanism, there's a lot of soft tissue damage here. And so you have to worry about bleeding and everything else, such as compartment syndrome, okay? Which this kid ended up getting. Healthy 14-year-old kid got compartment syndrome in his thigh. Dr. Duncan had to do lateral thigh incision, do a fasciotomy, open up this kid's thigh, and it took like 3 trips to the OR, and I don't know the end of the story. I don't know if he ended up with it closed or getting a skin graft over the fasciotomy wound. Okay? So, you know, again, simple fracture pattern, but high energy, all kinds of trouble. Yeah.
But surprisingly, the kid
such as heel is by the ear.
Yeah.
We were all like, this kid's got to have a master's degree. You know, but he had great pulses. So.
And he could have. And he certainly could have. Yeah. So, and it's just, it's also, if this had been open, okay, and this was something that was educated to me by some of my trauma colleagues, is that you got an open femur fracture and the wound is only 2 centimeters, okay? But you actually get in there and realize that, you know, you see that it's a small opening, but there's like overlaying by a couple centimeters and stuff like that. And when you actually get in there to have to work on it, you see all this soft tissue stripping and basically there's no periosteum on the femur for 10 centimeters. Basically, what you realize is it's really a grade 3B open injury, even though the wound is 2 centimeters, because that femur probably went through the skin, out and back in a distance of a very long way, and caused lots of soft tissue damage, lots of periosteal stripping, receded back into the small wound that you don't think is very much. So. Titanium elastic nails, and there the considerations for this. This is a hard treatment algorithm. Dr. Duncan is super super smart, and we've all taken care of a lot of pediatric femur fractures. But this is a conundrum. This kid still has open growth plates, but he's also not a kid. Okay, it's almost adult bone, but it's not quite adult bone. If you put in a standard rod from the greater troch or the piriformis fossa down the shaft of the femur, you risk violating the blood supply to the femoral head that still has open physis. And while only 5% of kids get avascular necrosis of their femoral head from a rotting like that, it's unrecoverable. You can't, the femoral head's dead, it's dead. There's no coming back from that. It's a prosthesis. So you try to never, that needs to be a zero at the end of your career, okay? And so there's a struggle about, okay, this kid's got a bigger femur, maybe too big for me to put titanium nails in. Because when you put the nails in, you can put them in a technique that misses all the growth plates. That's why they were developed. Okay? You put them in through drill holes, you slide them up inside the femur across the fracture, and you avoid all the proximal and distal growth plates. Okay? When you got a 14-year-old kid, you're like, man, you know, his canal's a little bit big for these because they only come in such a size, and I might not be able to get it stable, but it's probably still the right thing to do because the growth plates are open. So there's this struggle. Okay, and she put in titanium nails in this kid, and it wasn't stable enough, and she had to revise it to a special type of rod in order to get it done. But we've all had that mental gymnastics about what's the right thing to do. And you could have plated this. That would have been safe. But you don't like putting a plate in an almost adult femur. It's not the, you know, it's good, but, it, you know. That is a transverse mid-shaft femur fracture that's 100% displaced. Okay. And basically, it's 90 degrees angulated, and exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
All right.